Welcome, welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast. You are listening to episode 102, Over the Garden Wall, Candy Camouflage! I wish I had a candy camouflage. I am Mason Smith, rotoscoper numero uno tonight. I will be your host and MC, whatever, and I'm here with my fellow hosts and fellow MCs, Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson. Say hello.
Hello, everybody.
So for those of you who don't know, this is the second live show that we have done. We are so excited. It's taken us a long time to get here. It seems every other podcast and YouTube channel in the world has been doing live shows, but we've just been, you know, like 2D animation, stuck in the past. But now we're back up, and we're exciting. So you can go to rotoscopers.com/live to watch future live shows, and also rotoscopers.com at the very bottom has a list of future episodes and when we'll be recording. So let's not talk about the future. Let's talk about the now.
And now I have this beautiful new setup for my broadcasting.
I wish
you could see everything that's off camera. I got my laptop here. Oh, I am the chat master again tonight, so I will be chatting it up. Don't be offended if we don't bring up what you're saying in chat, because we don't want to get distracted. But I will be here to cause a ruckus on the chat wing. So make sure to log into that so you can participate in live chat. We're going to be having a lot of fun today. Over the Garden Wall. My goodness. This was a patron's choice. So if you are unfamiliar with our Patreon subscription program, we are able to do these things like video broadcasts, and we're able to do things like review recent movies that have come out, and also all of our subscribers, you know, we can do patron's choice thanks to our patrons. And so it's an ever-growing community that we call the Roto Nation. So it's an honorable organization. We have our own Facebook group, and I believe that the patrons who give at least $10 a month and have been patrons for at least 3 months can pick what movies we review, right?
Movie of their choice. So this
a
was
movie chosen, of their choice.
This was chosen by Rachel Wagner. So initially, when we did this, I thought that no one would be interested in the $10 patron level. I thought $5 would definitely be what everyone wanted. And turns out our most popular level is the $10 level. And right now we have so many patrons at the $10 and up level that our Patrons' Choice episodes are scheduled out till 2017. Like, I'm not even...
That means we have to commit to that long. Not that we're thinking of leaving, but like, it feels good that we have such like pre-programmed longevity.
Yes. So, you know, really what this means is we have to get up to that level that makes it so we can do this show every week, because 2017, that's crazy. We need a definitely need to speed that along, because I want to get to all these patrons' movies.
Oh, potatoes and molasses. If you want some, oh, just ask us. They're warm and soft like puppies and socks, filled with cream and candy rocks. Oh, potatoes and molasses.
It's very much happening in live action. Like, if you go on Hulu or Netflix, that these 10-part miniseries are starting to crop up. And I love it. I love it. We did Wayward Pines. We were watching that. I just love that we have these self-contained little miniseries, that you can digest, like, in 10 episodes. And then it's like this tiny little contained story. And, we'll talk about whether I want the series to continue on, but for now, I'm sure I was very curious about this miniseries. I had heard a lot about it from our patrons, but also friends of mine in my program here on campus, and I didn't know what to think.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Just to let everybody know that we are all going to be going through all spoilers.
Right. Major spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen it and you're like, I don't mind spoilers, then hey, join along. But if you're like, actually, I don't want to be spoiled about anything, then all you have to do is go to rotoscopers.com/overthegardenwall or Over the Garden Wall, iTunes, Over the Garden Wall, Amazon, and you'll be able to download/buy the whole series and be able to watch it with us.
I have all those links in the show notes as usual, so you can definitely check them out. So you, because I know people are so pumped that we are doing this. When I announced it on Twitter, just we've gotten so many tweets saying yes, and people are pumped. So I'm really excited. You know, like Mason said, we had heard a lot about this from the patrons. They, you know, in our patron group, a lot of people, there's a lot of discussion that happens, you know, favorite animated movies and TV shows and current events and different things. And this got brought up quite a bit, like all the time they were talking about Wall. And yeah. I wasn't really familiar with it. So I sort of just glazed over those discussions because I don't like really getting in deep of things that I don't know. I'm planning on watching
it. Fear of missing out.
No. I planned on watching it at some point, so I didn't want to get spoiled or whatnot. So I'm glad that I finally caught up. It's very simple to catch up. It's only 10 episodes. Each are about 10 to 12 minutes each. So it's really basically the length of a feature film. And so that's why we chose to do this mini series, because most TV series, if we were to do, that's a big commitment to do, you know, to watch the whole thing in a week. Well, what am I saying? We live in the Netflix age. People binge watch all the time. But nonetheless, it's a bigger commitment than we're used to. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this, Over the Garden Wall, this was created by Patrick McHale. He, this was like first pitched back in like 2004, I think. So it's been in production for a very long time. Of course, real production was stalled because when he first pitched it, I think they went with Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack at Cartoon Network, which is a great show, and McHale worked on it. And then, of course, Adventure Time, which is like their like flagship series now. So Patrick Hale started out, he was creative director for Adventure Time, and then he went on to be a writer. And so he's very involved, and he's been I watched a few featurettes on how they made Over the Garden Wall, and it went through many revisions. It was actually more creepy when it started out in pre-production, you know, pre-pre-production, than the actual product, if you can find that hard to believe. First recollections, okay, this, of course, this was back in it was like late 2014 when it started out. And then I guess it ran for like that whole year. And I had never heard of it. I had heard of Gravity Falls. Of course, I'd heard of Adventure Time. There's a few other ones on like Nickelodeon, Gumball. I lumped them all into this new mature kids cartoons that Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon are doing. So if I ever draw a parallel to Adventure Time or something that I'm kind of flippant about it, then that's where I'm coming from. But I was very, very, very impressed with Over the Garden Wall. I was fairly addicted to it and hooked by the time I finished watching.
Yeah, so it was a 5-night miniseries. So it had these 10 episodes, but they had it over basically 5 nights. Like you said, he graduated in 2006, and he kind of pitched this idea when he started working for Cartoon Network, and they liked it, and they were going to make it a series. But then he got moved to their feature film division, and they were going to create it as a feature film. And then, like you said, Adventure Time got in the way. And
doesn't it always?
I know. Isn't that just that small little thing called Adventure Time?
Right.
That, you know, became so huge as it is. They said, hey, do you have anything else you want to pitch? And Over the Garden Wall became, except for it was not called Over the Garden Wall. It was originally called Tome from the Unknown, and Tome is basically like a book, and it was sort of like this Bible that they used, and it was very mysterious. And so there is a short, and the short won at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. I was reading an interview by him at, on the Nerdist website, so I'll include a link to that in the show notes. But he was talking about the process of getting this made, and then the short, ultimately, what became Over the Garden Wall. And they changed the name to Over the Garden Wall because the tome, this book, disappeared when they were moving from the short to the actual miniseries. So it just didn't make sense anymore to have this title about something that doesn't exist. But I also included a link to watch that original short. And it still has Elijah Wood as the voice. I mean, the animation, it doesn't look like, oh, they had a low budget and then they had the full budget for the show. I mean, it looks exactly the same. So that's what I thought was really cool, watching that and just kind of seeing how this came to be.
Yeah, that's cool. And while we're talking here, we're going to get into, well, I'm going to get into like things like the lore, theories about what is what, secrets that you might have missed in the series. And so I got all that from my research, and I watched several YouTube videos. I watched from PBS Ideas channel, this guy named Trey the Explainer, and then Virtual Jordan. So kudos out to those guys for compiling these really awesome YouTube videos, like explaining all the intricacies and strange connections within the series. This miniseries is very well put together, and there's a lot of stuff to digest, a lot of secrets. And so I got a lot of stuff from them, so shout out to them. They helped my research for this prep for this episode a lot.
So my initial thoughts, like, well, first going into the first episodes, I was just like, what is this? Because the humor is so interesting. It's so... like, you don't really follow it until you, but because you don't follow it really well, it makes you want to watch it a little bit more just so you can get it. Like, he would throw all these little things like Beatrice. I was like, what is Beatrice's problem? And why does she talk in the first place? Like, you know, all of these things.
Not being magical.
What?
For not being magical, she talks, right?
Right, yeah. Okay. Like, for not being magical at all. But my absolute favorite was when it's like, oh, yeah, we found Fred. What? You talk?
That's right.
Oh, yeah, Fred the horse.
Well, we didn't steal. Well, you can't really steal Fred. He's a talking horse. He can pretty much do what he wants. There are a lot of great quotes in this miniseries, and so... I might go off on a few quotes. I wrote down some that I really liked.
I wish that I would have been able to remember all of the quotes is the thing. Like, I'll have to go in and watch these again just so that I can find some of these quotes, because they really are hilarious. Like, the writing in it was like I said, you don't catch it at first, but then as you keep watching it, it just, like, sucks you in.
Yeah. All right, what about you, Morgan? How was your experience?
I actually was blown away. I had, like I said, heard about this in the patron group and sort of dismissed it a little bit, despite the huge excitement that Rachel and Aja had for this. I was kind of like, I don't know if that's for me, but they claim it's amazing, so let's give it a chance. And for the very first episode, it was slightly morbid, but very Victorian. It had lovely music, and it just much intrigued me. And so after the first episode, I could not push play on the second episode fast enough. Just, you know, kept going from there. So I was really surprised about how much I liked it, but it was very weird. It was Alice in Wonderland-esque, kind of grotesque in certain spots. It's very scary. I mean, that first
episode, there's a couple of episodes that are very frightening.
Yeah, the very first episode, I think they do a great job of establishing the tone, because you have the Beast. And holy cow, I was watching
the first episode, it's quote-unquote the Beast. But that whole concept of like a frightening nightmare creature.
So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to give pretty good coverage to the characters and also the art and the music. And also, in between that, I guess we'll talk about like the overall tones and themes of this series, because it does go pretty deep, and it does bring up some pretty like mature themes, I guess.
Watching this, I definitely didn't think like, oh, this is for kids. You know, I think you can think the Greg, how just so juvenile he is.
I liked Greg.
Very little.
Greg.
But then you have all these underlying things that make it so much deeper. And yes, there are some really bonkers situations that happen, but still, I didn't feel that it was childish in any way.
Bonkers is a great way to describe it. Yeah, so the first episode we meet our two heroes, Wirt, played by Elijah Wood, which is really cool. And I guess I've been watching Lord of the Rings too much because I didn't know how he sounded with an American accent instead of a British accent. I'm not going to be doing my British accent because I know Aja's on the chat and she's waiting me to do a crappy British accent so she can make fun of me. And then Greg, so that's Colin Dean, who also did voice work on Adventure Time. Don't ask me which character. It's like Tiffany or something.
He was really good. I really liked
him. Isn't Greg such a little... awesome little guy.
I bought the whole series on iTunes, and then I was able to download like these extra snippet things, like behind the scenes videos. And yeah. So you see Elijah Wood and his like piercing blue eyes that like make you not really want to look at him.
Piercing blue eyes.
It's like there's something hidden behind those eyes. And then you see this like the cutest little kid, Colin Dean, as he comes around, and he's just like, well, you know, it's just so great. I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to like take you home and put you in my pocket.
Aww. Pack one up. I'll take two.
When they were casting for Wirt, they said, we want a voice like Elijah Wood. And so they want someone like him. And then the casting directors just went up and asked Elijah Wood, like, hey, do you want to be a part of this? And he's like, yeah, sure. So that's how Elijah Wood came to be. I mean, I guess it never hurts that.
Yeah, sure. It's not like Wilfred is going anywhere. Yeah. So Wirt and Greg, they work so well as this like C-3PO R2-D2 duo, of course, is derived from classic literature when you have famous duos. You know, there's the doubter and the optimist, or the pessimist and the optimist. There's mm-hmm. the doubter and the person with faith. And Wirt is definitely a doubter. I did not like Wirt when I started watching Over the Garden Wall. I thought he was everything that the series said he was, a pushover. You know, does everything that he's told. He doesn't really think for himself, or he's just wandering aimlessly and afraid, which is a huge theme in it. But, you know, he overanalyzes everything. Like the first couple episodes, he can never make a decision because he's like, let's go in there. No, wait, let's not. Wait, but we have to go in there. But, oh no, it's going to be horrible. Well, I guess we're going in because Greg just did something silly that got us in. But his overall arc is so good. Like, you really feel for him and fear for him, I guess. But you are really rooting for Wirt, I guess, or just wishing he could redeem himself towards the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
And, I don't know. Maybe I'm just overanalyzing this, but I think Over the Garden Wall is definitely, it's Wirt's story about how he overcame his own weaknesses and learned to face his fears, you know? Greg, on the other hand, he just wants to have a good time.
Well,
and keep his frog safe.
Right. One thing that I saw between the two, I thought that Wirt was a little bit more of like the poet, more of the... I don't want to say nonsensical, but it's like the one who thinks outside of the box and is just kind of like, what are you saying? I don't get it. And then Greg was a lot more of the literal minded, Wirt will say something. He's like, oh, you mean I have to go and do this? Okay. And he like does it literally, like, no.
Howard like tells people on him what their plans were. Like, oh, I thought I was supposed to hit you on the head. No.
Yeah. He's very, I don't know, that first quote, I can leave a trail of candy from my pants. That's the moment in episode one that I knew I was going to really like Greg. And people in the chat are berating me for apparently hating Wirt. I feel like the internet just breeds hyperbole. But I don't hate Wirt just because I didn't like him at the beginning. I liked him by the end because I understood what he was really going through. But Greg is he's just so silly. Like, everything, he's like literally in his own mindset, like he is in tune with his own frequency, and yet he's completely optimistic and very like, he will just go and do things. He doesn't think first about whether he can do it. He just goes and does it. And so watching some YouTube videos, people have, if you play Smash Brothers or if you have a Super Nintendo, most of you on chat probably don't even know what that is, but parallels have been drawn between Greg and Ness from the game Earthbound or Mother 2, I think it was called in Japan. And so both Ness and Greg have this kind of characterization to where they don't doubt they don't ever doubt whether they can do something. They just go out and do it. And mm-hmm. they're fearless optimists, and they're definitely the opposite of Wirt. And so I thought they made a great duo. And then very, very soon we are introduced to a third member who mixes up the group even more.
Yes.
Beatrice.
Super sassy little bluebird. And the very first time we see her, she's like, there's nothing magical about me. Like, not magical at all. Just a talking bird, you know? And so that's when I was like, okay, like from the very beginning, I'm not quite sure where we are. And they don't establish that at all. They're just lost. They're two boys mm-hmm. who are lost. They're trying to find their way home. They're not quite sure how they got there. And then we're thrown into this world that just has all these, you know, like I said, bonkers, bizarre situations, talking animals, and we're supposed to figure it out as we go, which is what I think is so intriguing about this miniseries, is because it's making you think, and you're trying to figure it out while the story's being presented.
Yeah,
how absolutely. Dare they make us think?
Oh, that's why I love this. So yeah, exactly. Like, I love that there's very little exposition. It's probably, if, okay, major spoiler here, but it's, the first episode probably starts like literally 5 minutes after they get lost in the unknown, after they fall in the water. Like, it's just boom, here we are, and they're figuring it out as we figure it out, you know? And so mm-hmm. I thought that was a really clever storytelling device to just start it off with that first episode, like boom. And my assumptions when I watched the first episode was like, all right, we're in the Renaissance or the 1600s, or we're in some fantasy world, and we have an apprentice wizard, because the hat made me think of Schmedrick from The Last Unicorn. And then we have Greg, who's some sort of like nomad boy who wears a teapot, you know, as a helmet, you know? And then, of course, they explain why everyone's dressed like that, why they're there. And stuff, or you get to see why things are the way things are. And it's just really interesting how we grow as a viewer watching this miniseries, because we know nothing and we're making our own wild assumptions with the characters in the first episode, and then things come full circle in the last episode. And that was just super cool, very intelligent storytelling.
Mm-hmm. So then we have the frog, who basically every episode has a different name.
He has over 10, I think he gets a total of 10 names.
Yep. Wirt Jr. was the first.
Oh yeah, Wirt Jr. At one point he is named Jason Funderburker, so which causes confusion at the end. And then George Washington, Benjamin Franklin.
Why is the frog in your pants? He can do what he wants.
Yeah, and then so the frog is, the singing voice is Jack Jones. Who's like, you know, renowned singing voice, and he gets, you don't know it till the end, but it's actually the frog who's singing that that haunting intro song with the piano solo at the very beginning, and then of course he has his own song on the little toad barge, the paddle boat that they're on, and then we talked about Beatrice, right?
Yeah, we talked about her. But we didn't talk about the woodsman and Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, the woodsman is such a complex character.
Yeah, with his daughter's light shining in his lamp, and it's like, whoa.
You know, when Christopher Lloyd goes from like a deep voice to like, oh, this voice, you know, I get so much Doc nostalgia from Back to the Future when I hear that, but he was really good. What were you going to say, Morgan?
Oh, I just, the very first episode, like we've mentioned, there's all these really strange elements that are introduced, and the one that he's pressing wood for oil.
Right.
Thing. But it works, whatever.
And then you find out. Well, it's interesting because in that first episode, he talks so, forebodingly or like mystically about it. He's like, this is my burden to bear. I find the trees, I grind them into oil to keep my lantern burning. You know, this is my burden and I must carry it. You know, and at first you're like, you're right there with Wirt. You're just like, okay, he's a weirdo. Let's move on, you know? But later on, it makes so much more sense. And this is what my friends were saying when they were talking about the show to me. They were saying, it's really, really funny, but it does have a plot, but not everything is plot centric. You know, there are tons of wacky, zany situations that happen that either don't have anything to do with the plot and are total red herrings, or they do have something to do with the plot, but you just don't know it yet, you know, or they're foreshadowing something that happens.
I thought he was a villain at the beginning. I thought, okay, you know, we escaped him, we escaped the beast, and we're going to move on. But I had a feeling that he was going to come back, and he did, but just not in the way that I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And for a while, I was right there with Wirt. I thought he was the beast, you know, lantern, mm-hmm. singing, all kinds of stuff. And so other memorable characters, I really like Jason Funderburker. He's like the most annoying and pathetic character on the whole show. And like Wirt is like, oh, everyone loves him. He's so much greater than me. He's going to go out with Sarah and I'm not.
See, that's when they start introducing that, you know, first you think this is set back in time, and then they start introducing these elements that seem very modern, and you're like, girlfriend, you want to, what? And I really...
Oh, yeah, like, and that's the big reveal. Oh, my gosh, but mostly I just love Jason Funderburker. He's so great. Apparently he was modeled after a young... Patrick McHale. Patrick McHale.
Oh, really?
Like, he's supposed to look like he did back in high school.
That's funny. Yeah, well, so. I mean, if you're going to put yourself in a show, you might as well do it at your glory days, right?
Yeah, well. And then Sarah's pretty cute. She's like, I don't know, I like her one quote. I wrote it down here. It's like, oh, we're just going to hang out and drink age-appropriate drinks. Yeah, you know, age-appropriate stuff that isn't illegal. I was like, this is a great show for kids. I want my kids to watch this. And then I saw the last episode, and I was like, oh, this is really scary. Maybe not, but maybe so. Maybe one episode per year, and by the time they're 12, they can watch the last episode.
It's like Harry Potter books. It's like, I don't think you're ready for volume 7 yet.
I don't think you're ready for book 4 yet. At least maybe not the last half. But anyway.
What about Adelaide?
Oh, Adelaide. She was really creepy. And then Auntie Whispers is her...
Oh, my gosh.
Auntie Whispers is voiced by Tim Curry. Isn't that great?
Yes.
Hey, did anybody think she'd look just like, what's her name, Uni Baba or something like that from Spirited Away?
Yeah.
That's one of the correlations I made. I felt that this felt very Miyazaki and very Spirited Away to me, where it's just it's really wonky characters and you just accept them.
Yeah, in that particular scene when she's walking through, she, you know, I can't remember any quotes and I can't do a good Tim Curry voice as you've heard in the Ferngully episode, but I just thought the way she just had this gigantic head and tiny arms, tiny limbs and giant bulging eyes that kind of shifted around everywhere. I was like, gosh, I'm getting a real Spirited Away vibe with this lady. I don't know if anyone else did.
Well, yeah. The moment she starts eating the turtles, you're like,
oh,
things that make you go.
Yeah, but I loved Auntie Whispers, and actually there were so many amazing side characters that that just blew me away by how funny they are.
Okay,
and
a lot of it.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, another funny side character. Now that you're talking about it, was the teacher in like episode 3 or something?
Oh, the teacher. A is for apple that he gave to me, but it was warm inside. He had a very Betty Boop type style of singing.
Yeah, and then, like, why is the question that I keep asking, why did he leave me? It's just like, oh, Beatrice says, oh, this girl's got baggage. I'm like, yeah, she does.
Yeah, she does. Her whole life is about Jimmy.
Jimmy!
Jimmy, who's like Hank Hill. He has, like, very, like, Mike Judge voice.
He does.
All right. I think a lot of the appeal of the show has to do with the art. And it was hard for me to get a grasp on what exactly we were dealing with here. It was like, It was like Americana folk culture from like the late 1800s, early 1900s, and it just explored all the quirky things that were going on in that time period, like creepy rural agricultural communities that have their own weird rituals, tiny schoolhouses with forlorn school teachers, you know, big band concerts on a paddle boat, you know, it's just stuff that I don't think modern animation has even touched yet. I mean, there's Princess and the Frog, but that didn't take it where this show took it.
No.
You know, and I really loved it. You know, part of me wishes we had done this as a Halloween/October episode, because the whole style and all the colors and the sound effects, just the diegetic world that they set up, just made me feel that autumn breeze, you know, and all the smells and sounds came back. And of course, I'm languishing in 100-degree Texas summer right now. And so maybe that's why I really want to go back to autumn.
Oh, yeah, that was another thing. Yeah. It definitely fit for an autumn, fall/Halloween theme. Halloween was very obvious, but...
Right.
Just how, I don't know, people love fall. It's a very happy time, even though it's a gloomy time. And I thought it was perfect in fall.
Yeah, the thing about autumn is that everything has this uncanny look. Like, you see a tree, but it doesn't look like a tree you've seen all year, you know? The leaves are different or they're off. And so the tree makes a completely different sound because of that. And so it really gives off this, like, haunting, spooky vibe. And it was really captured in this show.
Yeah. Well, and when they go to the random, like, the pumpkin place, like, where all the pumpkins are alive at the very beginning, and they're like...
The Huskin Barn, or the Huskin Bee.
Yeah, he's like, no one ever leaves here.
Yeah, it's very Children of the Corn-esque, you know?
Yeah.
But I just love it. Just intricate, you know, layouts and backgrounds, and then there's a couple of the animated sequences just... blew me away by how different they were from the rest of the show. I think one of them was the Highwayman song, you know, when he's like, I'll drag you up the road, steal the shoes off of your feet, you know, and he stumbles back, you know, and then he gets up close to the camera. There's this really cool YouTube video. Nick Cross is his name. He was creative director for that episode, at least, and it shows his technique of how he produced that shot. You know, it goes from the animatic to the rough animation and stuff. So I guess we have it here on the Google Doc that we use, and hopefully maybe we can put it in the show notes too. Oh,
we can make that happen, Mason.
We can make it work. And what about the music? Like, the music
was great.
Was so brilliant.
I loved it. First off, I have a Pandora station that's sort of old-timey 30s, 40s jazz.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so unique and different, and it just like kind of takes you back. It's very calming. And so at the very beginning, we had, you know, music that was that style, and I loved it. But then it really varied in its style. There were opera singers at different points. There was a jug band.
Oh, that's right.
It had that common vein of this old-timey jazz, which helped to set this period back. You know, we were saying this is more of a Victorian era. Victorian and 1940s jazz don't necessarily align. And so that's kind of where... I don't know.
It kind of had this like kind of vaudeville kind of, or like cabaret rock kind of vibe, you know, where everything had the gross sounding piano, you know, and stuff like that, you know, things like big bands and things like that. And that jazzy element too, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So what I was in those articles that I'm going to link in the show notes, the different interviews that I was reading. So they used real instruments. It was very complex, and they wanted to make sure to get this. They use real instruments instead of synths, which is common for, you know, TV shows and whatnot when you don't have the budget for a full, you know, big band or orchestra. So I thought that was impressive. Maybe that was just one. It makes a difference having a live recording.
It really does.
And especially since the music was so crucial to carrying this. I mean, not only was there instrumentals, but there were songs. But they weren't Broadway type of songs or Disney type of songs.
They were so well done. It was like Phineas and Ferb level songs. Okay, so what was y'all's favorite song or songs?
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Potatoes and molasses.
If you can't see them, put on your glasses. Oh, I love it.
Who would have thought that a song about potatoes and molasses would be a favorite? But that
super
moment
catchy.
Is funny.
They're so much sweeter than algebra classes. Stomach is grumbling, mouth starts a mumbling. There's only one thing to keep your brain from crumbling. And then Greg, you know, the voice actor for Greg just makes it all the more adorable.
Yeah. Well, okay. It goes back and forth between the Toy Makers song, the Corton song.
Oh my gosh, the Corton song.
The Corton song, that one, and also the teacher when she's like her ABCs for her loneliness.
Her lovesick ABCs. All right. Yeah. Potatoes and Molasses is a close second, but I love, like Chelsea said, I'm right there with her, the Corton song by the Toy Maker. And if you'll permit me, I will sing the first voice of the Corton song.
We permit.
The Corton song in my best Toy Maker voice. I have to do a little bit of this. Write a loving letter, boy, with swoops and sweeps and curls. Calligraphers are just the thing to help you win your girl. Then you need to dress up smart. The tailor's here by chance. You'll switch your trousers, hole your belt, and find Couture of France. Your shoes, my goodness, how they're worn, but you're too young to know. There's nothing courts a woman scorn, scuffs on the toe.
It's true.
The cobbler can attend to that. Meanwhile, you must have cake. The baker and patissier need work for goodness sake. Hi, dee 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 dum dee day. What a merry time we'll have upon your wedding day. And at this time, Mert's like, what? There's work for all when little boys get married. I love that guy's like quivering singing voice.
It's kind of falsetto, kind of it's very quiet and just trying so hard.
I know it's got this it's hard to put it in time, you know, but it sounds just like classic music, not classical, but like classic music. I was watching some videos about kind of like little secret connections within the series. And one thing that stood out was the Beast has his own song called Come Wayward Souls. And the song, if you really listen to it, it's kind of like it's like an anti-remix of the song, Oh Holy Night. Like if you took the lyrics, you could totally sing it to the tune, you know, and I can't do his voice, but it's kind of like, come wayward souls who wander through the darkness, you know. There is a light for the lost and the meek. And like, it's such a creepy song. The lyrics are so creepy. And yet it's this like weird opera, like baritone voice coming from this like creepy, like he's like the embodiment of all darkness and fear. And I just thought that was a weird, really weird like thing that they did with his song, and that he even had a song.
What yeah. were you saying, Morgan?
Oh, just the fact that, you know, we have this soundtrack and these songs that we're talking so much about. I was looking on Amazon and I couldn't find a soundtrack to purchase, which I think is such a shame. You know, I don't blame Cartoon Network. Okay, we're going to do this little mini series and, you know, we'll see how it does. And it ends up taking off and being something that people around the world love. Maybe they will release a soundtrack at some point. You can find it on YouTube. And there's
on the Cartoon Network YouTube account, they have the main songs in good quality. They're each about a minute and a half long.
Yeah, but you can't buy them. So I guess, you know, YouTube is the new iTunes, so I'll listen there.
Yeah, who knows? All right, so the humor in the show.
Loved
what did
it.
Y'all think? I was so afraid it would turn into Adventure Time.
Well, I've never seen Adventure Time. Is it similar?
Yes and no. Like, okay, so Adventure Time is very similar to Over the Garden Wall, but the humor revolves around different subjects, whereas Adventure Time is it's very centralized around pop culture and like nerd culture, you know, like fantasy stuff, science fiction, and you know, definitely pop culture. But this one is, I think the humor is a little more interesting because it centers around quirky characters that are based on folk culture from, you know, Americana and stuff like that. And so, yes, you do have it, both shows have this kind of we're all mad here vibe, you know, but I personally liked Over the Garden Wall a little bit better because Adventure Time is like what happens when every character is like Greg. And sometimes I get a little overloaded with that. Although it is a very good show, very well put together show. And Pendleton Ward is a creative genius. I just like Over the Garden Wall better.
Okay.
See, good that's, you know, now that we're kind of on this vein of Adventure Time versus comparing, you know, to Over the Garden Wall, I haven't been able to get into Adventure Time just because it just has all these seasons and it's very much a commitment. While Over the Garden Wall, it was one season. Each episode wasn't even a full, you know, 20 minutes. It was 10 minutes and it was very digestible. And so I was able to get through it in basically, you know, a few hours and I loved it. While Adventure Time, everyone loves it. I'm sure I would love it, but I just don't feel ready to make that big old commitment, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe I should. I probably should, but someday.
Well, it I gotta get depends on how much
on a time first. I'm on season two.
Oh, like, no, you're doomed then. All right. I don't know. I thought that mostly everything that Greg says is like really cute and funny in a really random way.
Yeah, I enjoyed.
Ain't that just the way?
I enjoyed the banter between Beatrice and Wirt.
Oh, and yeah.
Just really anything Beatrice said, really. I just liked her quips. Like at the very beginning, one of her, like, she was just like, you two lost kids are with no purpose in life, right? It's like, maybe they're going to bury you there. Yep, that's what they're going to do. He's like freaking out as he's like digging in the pumpkin patch.
Very sarcastic. Oh, I love that montage when, we'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, I love Beatrice and Wirt because like that one time when they're in that old guy's mansion, the John Cleese episode, he's like, door's locked. I guess we're stuck here and we'll have to spend some quality time together. Help! She does not want to spend quality time with Wirt. Aw, but then they like, I don't know. I know everyone was shipping Wirt and Beatrice, but it was just not meant to be by the end of the series. But they formed a good bond at the end. I love the theme of fear in this show. If you notice, in every episode, someone is afraid of something, and that's the central conflict from the episode. You know, I'm afraid of the beast in the woods. I'm afraid of this painting because there's a ghost. You know, we're afraid of the beast. You know, I think the whole show is about Wirt, like, obviously it is, like, Wirt conquering his fear of the unknown, definitely.
Well, that's what the whole town is called, Unknown.
Yeah, the whole land is called Unknown.
It's like everything. He's afraid of everything. And I don't know. You could kind of look at that in a really deep, metaphysical, philosophical way. And like, I am afraid of life itself. Interesting. But I liked it.
Yeah, definitely. Any other themes?
Lots of themes. You know, theme of strangers. Themes of, like Chelsea said, life, mortality, themes of regret. You see that a lot with
Wirt. Lots of regret.
Sadness, depression, themes of, I mean, there's so many themes that they represent and that we focus on in different episodes.
Cool. So how did y'all feel with the big reveal? I'm talking about when you finally figure out where they actually are. Well, it doesn't really explain where they actually are, but we go back in time to how this all happened. I was like totally confused. I was like, wait a second, we're listening to rock music. Wait a second, Wirt's wearing like modern clothes. Wait a second, there's a fan and a tape player. They're in a house, it's a neighborhood and cars. What's going on? And so it's actually set in modern day. I want to say like the mid 90s, late 80s, I guess.
Yeah.
And either
the
that
best
or all
time
of
time period.
Either that or it's modern day and all of Wirt's friends are hipsters because that's kind of what it was. You know.
In East Nashville.
And it explains how they got there and who Sarah is and the struggle Wirt has facing the unknown. Like, does she like him or not? Which I can relate to him. Like when you were in high school or middle school and maybe you finally got around to asking someone to dance or asking someone out, you know, or asking someone on a date or whatever, there's always that element of the unknown, like, will they say no or will they say yes? Like, will you get what you desire or will your dream, like, be shattered, basically? That's how it works in high school.
And it's just interesting that this whole time it's set up, you know, it's this big thing. What is it? What is it? What is it? And it's just something as simple as asking a girl out, right? But I love that for that reason, that it's able to, in our mind, take on the form of something so much bigger, you know, this unknown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was for a split second when they were right in front of that train, right before they got out of the train's way, I thought, oh my gosh, they're dead. They're dead this whole time.
They're in the afterlife. Well, there are many people who theorize that they are in a sort of afterlife as they hang on between life and death in the water.
Hmm. There are a lot of films, a lot of movies. Film and a movie is the same thing, but that focus on this, oh, I'm in another world. I'm actually dead, and this is the time in between, and
All right. So do you think it was all real? Do you think the unknown and all the troubles they went to, do you think it really happened? Or do you think it was something like, a death trance dream brought on by lack of oxygen in the water? Or was it like being knocked out and hallucinating? Or was it a real place that was somehow in between, you know, life and death?
I can't.
I have a theory that it was real.
Interesting.
And yeah, I'm willing to back it up.
Prove it.
Y'all want to hear it? Okay. So when they're in the hospital, okay. First of all, why would the miniseries go through so many things that Greg did by himself, like off by himself, if it's just Wirt having a dream? You know, or walking around in a dream world. Also, in one of the episodes, the frog swallows Auntie Whisper's bell, which glows. Mm-hmm. That was a terrifying episode, by the way. And when they're in the hospital, and Wirt makes a reference to telling the stories of the adventures they were on, but he doesn't say, you know, he says, and then Wirt went up and did, oh, Wirt's awake, you know? And so he didn't really say what they did. So it's like, you can't tell if he's, you know, retelling the stories in the miniseries or not, but he's shaking around the frog and the frog has a glowy tummy, meaning that Auntie Whisper's bell is in the frog's tummy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, several fans theorize that the unknown is a place between life and death, but I think it really happened. And so it might've been something like that. I think it could be an Alice in Wonderland type thing where you find yourself in a dream world that, or even the Wizard of Oz, where things are representative of your life. I have this weird theory that most dreams that you have are really about things that happen during the day or things that you're worried about. They just turn into symbols. And so it might've been something like that. One thing that you should really pay attention to if this is like your first time viewing is the opening montage of episode one. It shows a bunch of really random scenes. Mm-hmm. If you really look at it, it's actually the main characters that they meet in all the episodes before they were in their current predicament. Mm-hmm. You know, like it shows a black cat riding on a carriage pulled by two turkeys with a bunch of pumpkins. And that's actually, what's his name? It starts with Enoch. Enoch, the head pumpkin guy, the one who's like, I sentence you to a few hours of community service. And it's like happy, fun times working in the field. But during the epilogue, a black cat pops out of the top of Enoch's head. And so you find out that all along, Enoch was just this black cat dressed up as Enoch. And or you see the woodcutter and his daughter is like by the well, like looking out towards the woods. And so that could have been moments before she was captured by the beast. So lots of different, the fish that's fishing, he was in the series. You see Beatrice as a human, looking angry and looking off at a bluebird. That could be moments before she chunked the rock that got her cursed, you know? So if you pay attention to the opening montage, it pretty much reveals everything that happens in the show. And I didn't know this until I put the captions on for the videos. You can hear a faint train whistle at the start of each episode after episode one.
Well, just spoiled it right there.
There you have it, folks. There you have it.
Interesting.
Very, very interesting show. And I, as much as I would love to go chronologically minute by minute through every episode, I think we only have time to really talk about like some really like memorable moments from each episode. I feel like that's mm-hmm. fair to our fans and fans of the show who want to talk about it. But obviously we cannot do a blow by blow playthrough of every episode. But we talked a little bit about the old gristmill, how creepy it was and how it established this like really macabre vibe.
I liked the fairy tale style where you just know that nothing is supposed to make sense. You know, everything that talks, everything that is, does its own thing. Like, I think you just accept it. I liked that. I feel like there's not enough of those sometimes. But then there are some where you're like, what? Maybe they don't quite get it as well. But this one, it was telling a fairy tale. And you knew that from the beginning that, all right, these are the rules of the universe. Nothing makes sense.
I accept that and move on.
I thought that hard times at the Huskin Bee was a very creepy episode, and all the creepy pumpkin people. Pottsfield is actually it's probably a mix up of the term Potter's Field, which is an old timey phrase for a place where they would bury unknown people. So that would make sense because of all mm-hmm. the skeletons at the end. You know, so there's a little tidbit for you.
As we're only two episodes in at this point, and
we're already dealing with possessed skeletons.
Yeah, they're digging their own grave, and you know, it's not revealed that it's for these other skeletons, and it gets sort of frightening. Like, man, what sort of situations are they going to get put in? And then it flips on its head, and it's actually pretty tame, and the pumpkin.
They're actually really happy to see their skeleton brethren come back. They're like, hey, good to have you back.
One way and then flipped it, and you know, it was like one of the themes of fear, like you fear what you don't know, you fear the unknown, and so they don't know and they're basically assuming the worst. We're mm-hmm. digging our own graves. Oh no, this is horrible, they're gonna kill us. But actually when you put a little perspective and light into it, it was actually fine this whole time. Like, you really were just doing community service.
Yep, I sentence you to a few hours of community service. And I love the montage afterwards. They're like super happy and having fun, like out in the fields, like doing work and stuff. It probably feels great because they're out in the autumn, you know. So I really liked all that stuff. It had unexpected cute surprises, I guess we can say.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the chapter 3, Schooltown Follies and Songs of the Dark Lantern. I loved all the songs. In chapter 4, the Highwayman's song was great. That was based off of a black and white live action film from way back in the day called Minnie the Moocher, and it had a song and dance sequence where there was kind of a dance that was in that style. Don't get it twisted, it was not a Disney animated short, despite the name Minnie. And so, you know, you can always go look it up on YouTube. I'm sure it's up there. I like the Schooltown Follies was pretty fun.
Yeah, that whole episode they had a lot of really good moments. And the fact that the dad of the school teacher, like, he gets all afraid because I didn't buy this school for fun.
Yeah.
I bought it specifically to teach animals to read and write.
And then he has to sell these instruments, and then the instruments go, like, are stolen. And he's like, what is going on? And it's a charity festival. Isn't it awesome? Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, what's the they're like, all right, we're going to sneak out there and get him. And Craig's like, and steal his stuff or something like that. He's just totally random with what he wants to do. But that's kind of what they had to do so that they could do their grand benefit concert with potatoes and molasses. I liked that weird sequence when I think it was called Ringing of the Bell or Babes in the Woods, chapter 7 and 8, when Greg falls asleep wishing on the star that he wants to help Greg. And so he's like summoned up into the stars, and there's all these funny furry animals and stuff. And it all kind of looked like an old like Betty Boop, kind of like, you know, Fleischer Studios, you know, Felix the Cat, you know, old silly symphonies type of vibe, you know, with mm-hmm. the kind of old school looking animation of the dancing and singing. you know, with all the greeting committees where it's like, oh, really? There's a third committee. Where are the other committees? And then it snaps to this weird, creepy image of like a creepy beast that's all depressed and it's gray and dark and gloomy. He's like, okay, that's enough. Right after that. And so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, of course.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying that was a unique episode in what it was able to do. We entered yet another world, the dream world. I felt like this was a video game, you know? It's like Aladdin video game where
you go to Sky World.
You enter this random dream cloud world that isn't in the movie, and you do it for an episode and you go on to the next thing. Like, very episodic.
Mm-hmm. I think it worked best that they put it in a mini series as opposed to a film.
What, the dream sequence?
No, the whole thing. Like, instead of making this, because we say that it is basically the length of a feature film, but I think it worked out a whole lot better making it short, you know, episodic like that, as opposed to making it one film. Because then if you're watching it as one film in theaters, like type, people might get confused.
If it were a feature film, I feel that the story arc would be structured in such a different way. We wouldn't have a little minute, let's introduce something, let's, you know, have a resolution. It would just have much more of an overarching theme that would, you know, would be introduced very early on, and then it would be concluded, you know, near the end. I feel like everything would have to have its resolution at the end for this to work. And Mikhail did that. They, you know, it was actually very hard to write for this as a miniseries, and people asked, oh, would you do another miniseries again? And he was like, maybe. It was just really hard. And I understand, because it is a miniseries. It's not a full feature film, but it's so short, every episode. It really, you start talking about a certain thing, and then, you know, 2 minutes later, there's resolution.
Yeah, I have a theory that it's... Yeah. I have a theory that it's even harder to make a short animated film than it is to make a feature-length animated film. Just because your writing and your story has to have to be spick and span. I think if they had made this into a feature film, they would have had to put everything in chapter 9 at the beginning of the film. They would have to show the exposition. Hey, modern day, this is how we got here. Dream world, this is how we get back home, you know? And I don't think it would be that cool.
No, yeah, I think that's the big reveal that makes it so satisfying, is that you've been invested this whole time, and then finally in episode 9, you find out, oh, it all makes sense now. You know, that's why they're wearing those clothes. That's why it's wearing a teapot. And I'll be honest, you know, it's like Chelsea said, you know, fairy tales, you just kind of accept the fairy tale and its rules for what it is. So when I saw them wearing their clothes, I never really questioned it. I just thought, okay, like everything else here is bonkers. Let's move on. But it really did come to light in that episode. I'm like, oh, it's Halloween. You're not just a dunce. Got it.
Yeah. But yeah, there's that one part where they're like, what are you supposed to be? Oh, I don't know. I just kind of thought I'd throw something. He never finishes it because he doesn't know why he dressed that way. He just put something kind of cool on. What a cool cosplay, though. I cut my hair shorter, maybe I'll do that for Halloween.
You can either do that, or if you keep your hair long, you could be Riley's imaginary boyfriend from Inside.
Oh, yeah.
Yes!
I would die for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Riley!
Another thing I noticed is how the weather turns, at the end of the series, it turns from autumn to winter, which is kind of cool to watch. And there's definitely a transitionary quality in there, you know, thematically. And, by the time you see the epilogue, where you see most of the, you know, mostly all the major characters in the series are doing all right again, you know, now that the beast isn't threatening them, it is completely winter now. So it kind of marks a complete change in the unknown. So I liked that.
Yeah, I really liked the ending. I liked the big reveal of the beast and the huntsman.
Ooh.
And what his motives were, why he was doing what he was doing, and it just had a great payoff for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just surface level. It wasn't some like something gimmicky. It was something totally new that I hadn't seen before. And I really felt that it paid off and worked very well.
I was so happy and a little emotional that the woodcutter's daughter came back. She just popped up. from the house, you know. But that was cute. Hey, did y'all notice that here's something to watch out for, something that no one has talked about yet in all these YouTube videos and all these analyses, that the epilogue, okay, there's 2 points in the series, at least, when you see through a mask, like a Photoshop mask. And one of them is through most of the cloud area, like the stars, celestial area, where Greg goes when he wishes upon the star. Almost when it goes through his vision, all you see is the frame through like a circle. If you go back to chapter 7 or 8, he sees almost everything through like this circle. And I was like, well, that's weird. Does Greg have like telescopic vision or something? Because he like zooms in on the north wind and all that stuff. The epilogue is framed in an oval filter, or like an oval mask, you know, speaking in Photoshop terms. And so I want to go back and watch for everybody in the show who has the oval shaped eyes instead of circle shaped eyes, because maybe they have something to do with everything that's been going on in the series. So I don't know, maybe that's just a red herring or a wild bantha chase or something like that, but I think there might be something there.
Theory.
a Mason theory, if you will. But I don't know what the theory is, because I'm going to watch for someone with oval-shaped eyes. Surely there's a wiki that has all the characters.
There is an Ironwall wiki. I was looking at it earlier, and they have, it's funny, they have protected pages. So it's like, some of our pages are protected. If you want to view them, you must contact a moderator. I'm like, wow.
Whoa, really protected pages. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so creepiest moment in all of Over the Garden Wall. Go.
For me, it was the very beginning when that, like, the fake beast, what they thought was the beast, which was like the wolf thing.
Horrifying.
Yeah, when he goes in and he gets sucked into the well, not the well, but the
churning wheel.
Yeah, the wheel, and then he just, what comes out is the turtle. Like, what is this?
Yeah, note to self, never let your dog eat a small black turtle, which are everywhere in the show. That's
yeah,
weird.
I don't. What is the deal with these turtles? And that was the beginning. I was like, I need to know what the deal is with this turtle thing, because they're everywhere.
Well, if you go back to episode 9 in Wirt's room, there's like a poster of a black turtle.
Well, but they're also in the water. That's why there's a lot of frogs. They're in the water in their real life, kind of drowned, basically. And so,
oh yeah,
so it would be surrounded by turtles and frogs and amphibians and sort of things like that.
Yeah, but I was really curious about that. I don't think that ever got explained, like, what was the whole black turtles thing? Because there's a whole barrel of them in the episode with Lorna. And that brings me... Oh, go ahead.
Well, does that mean that all the turtles come in right before or right after something scary or something unknown? I don't know.
I'd have to go back and watch. All right, so that brings me to my creepiest moment, and that is Lorna's transformation... the episode where they see Auntie Whispers, because you find out that the monster isn't Auntie Whispers, it's Lorna, that she's the one who eats the people and then organizes their bones in the basement. And then when they turn around and see her and she's this like horrible, creepy monster looking thing, I was like, okay, never mind. I can't let my kids watch this.
That was terrifying.
Yeah,
it was so scary, but she gets cured, I guess.
Was it like, did you find it to be Watership Down terrifying?
Well, Watership Down was terrifying in that it was shocking how brutal it was.
Yeah,
this was a straight up horror element, how she turned into a like a creepy vampire lady with giant teeth.
Yeah,
I'm not disturbed by Watership Down that much, but this I was like, okay.
It was really freaky. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I like a good spooky, you know, spooky cartoon film, whatever.
Come to an end. Do you think? I mean, what I loved about this series, this miniseries, is that it's very self-contained. It has a beginning and it has a very clear end, and everything kind of wraps up. It even says that at the very end, like, here's a very happy ending for everybody.
Aww.
But that people are clamoring for a second season. So do you think that there should be a continuation of the series?
That's hard to say.
All right, I'm sorry if I offend diehard fans of Over the Garden Wall, but absolutely not. There should not be, like, nothing. Yeah. Leave it the way it is. No sequels, no prequels, no offshoots, no spinoffs. You know? Just leave it. You know? And I mean, of course, Over the Garden Wall had unsolved mysteries and unexplained things, but that's what makes it so great. If they explained all of it and expanded on all of it, gave everything a reason, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it wouldn't be Over the Garden Wall anymore. And animation is a medium for storytelling, and the story has been told. So leave it like that, producers. And move on to the next great idea. Move on to the next Over the Garden Wall, you know?
I tried to do my Thunder Tube and it got tangled up in my arm.
Mation has spoken. Do y'all agree?
I absolutely agree. I think this is perfect. I mean, and that's what makes it so good, is that it's just a one-off, and it was so great. It was moving. It was terrifying. It was funny. It was all these things. And it would just be really hard to recreate. I know there's the temptation to do that, but I mean, think of the situation and just the big reveal that made this so satisfying. It's because there were so many unknowns, but now it's like, what, are they going to trip in the lake or the river this time and go into the over?
They're going to bring Sarah along with them, like Back to the Future too.
Yes. Hey, Doc, let's go.
Yeah, leave it. It's good. Like, maintain your legacy at your high point.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I hate, this is nothing animation related, but this, you know me, I'm a huge fan of Survivor. There's some people on Survivor that have such a great legacy the first time around that they're these all-star players. People love them. They don't end up winning, or maybe they do, but then they go back for an all-star season and their reputation is just totally tarnished because they get voted off early first. They're just moves, and you know, it kind of puts them down a few notches because of that. And so I think it can totally relate to anything. It's just, you're number one, let's stay that way. Let's leave you at a really high note in people's minds.
You can't beat pigs with pigs.
Can't beat pigs with pigs.
Yeah. Unless you're, well, I'm not gonna say it, but I don't like when you expand the universe of an intellectual property so much to where it's just all over the place. It becomes public domain pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like some sequels. I like some spinoffs, but keep Over the Garden Wall exactly as it is. I will permit a comic book adaptation, which there is.
Well, you got that, Nathan. All right, so we asked our listeners on Facebook and Twitter, we said, what is your favorite moment from Over the Garden Wall? And Rachel says, I think Auntie Whispers and Lorna is my favorite. I love Beatrice. Rapunzel de la Torre says, the lumberjack turning off the lantern, as well as confronting the beast, as well as the daughter coming back at the end, crying emoji. Corazon says, potatoes and molasses. Greg is adorable. Adriana says, the entirety of the last two episodes, because it wraps up the story beautifully. And Trish has a two-part. She says, the whole thing is terrific, but my favorite things nobody mentioned yet are The Highwayman and Greg's Dream. Awesome.
Ooh,
anime.
The Highwayman.
The Book King has another shout-out for Potatoes and Molasses. He says, everything about the last two episodes and Auntie Whispers. Man, we have a lot of people commenting. This is great. Eric says, I really like the flashback to Halloween night when the story began. It really comes together.
There we go.
See, that's what's so great. There's such a payoff in these last episodes. So I'm not going to read all of them. I'll include a link to this Facebook and Twitter post so you guys can comment as well and see what other people wrote. But
wow. So many responses. We don't even have time to say them all.
I know.
All right. Let's wrap it up. Let's rate it.
All right. As a TV show, miniseries. Miniseries is what I'm going for. As a miniseries, I give it 4.5 stars. We'll go with that. I mean, like the payoff, it had everything you would want out of a miniseries, I would say.
I'm going to also give it 4.5 stars. I thought that it was very pleasant, despite its, you know, macabre sort of themes and tones. Like I've been mentioning, it seems like the buzzword for this episode is payoff. It just had such a wonderful payoff. I got really invested in the characters. The music was lovely. The animation was lovely. The voice acting, all around. You look at these individual pieces, like 1930s music and really kind of dopey humor, really bonkers characters. Individually, they don't seem like they would work together at all. But that is the masterpiece of this, is that they do. They mesh and blend so well. So I'm going to give it 4.5 stars.
Guys, giving it 5 stars. This is why, as many of you know, I think maybe there were two films that I've given 5 stars on the podcast. I know that one of them is The Lion King, which I consider to be just darn near perfection. But The Lion King is a film, and this is a miniseries, so I don't feel bad giving a miniseries 5 stars when there's a Lion King that has 5 stars. So, but you know what? It is just near, darn near perfect, this miniseries. I love how self-contained and how thoroughly thought out and intertwined it is. I think the animation is beautiful. I love the style of it all. Like Morgan said, you know, this kind of turn of the century type look and all the quirky characters. I mean, I was looking through one of my old sketchbooks and I drew something months ago that looks like just like the Beast.
Wow.
And I was like, nice. I know. And I'm using this for a computer game that I'm programming right now. And I'm like, great. I don't want people to draw unfair parallels and say that I was just copying off Over the Garden Wall, because I just saw it today for the first time. But, you know, I love the adventure, and I love the scariness, and I love the quirkiness and the humor. I think it all blends together into something that's truly unique, that rises above the rest of the you know, mature audience cartoons that have been out recently, and you know, in the past years by Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, and whatever. And so I feel right. My soul feels right with me giving it 5 stars, not on a film basis, but on a miniseries basis. That's how I'm justifying it.
Why do you have to justify? It's your score. It doesn't matter.
This is our opinions. This doesn't mean that this is the, you know, this is law. This is the gospel, you know, because the rotoscoper said it was 5 or 4.5 stars. It is. No, that's the thing. It's just our opinions.
It's just my opinion, you know. I feel good. I feel great giving it 5 stars. I feel good about myself.
Perfect.
Good.
And isn't that the most important thing? That Mason feels good about himself.
Write a loving letter, boy, that swoops and sweeps and curls. Calligraphers are just a thing to help you win your girl. Then you'll need to dress up smart, the tailor's here by chance. You'll stitch your trousers, hold your belt, and find culture of friends. Your shoes, my goodness, how they're worn, but you're too young to know. Nothing courts a woman's scorn more than scuffs on the toe. The cobbler can attend to that, meanwhile you must have cake. The baker and patissier need work, for goodness sake. Hi.
So let's move into our voicemail segment. We got 3 voicemails, and 2 of them are from patrons, and 1 of them is from a familiar voice. So our first one we are going to listen to is from Rachel.
Hi, Rotoscopers. I'm so excited you guys are doing Over the Garden Wall. I love the podcast, and I just thought this was the most brilliant series. I couldn't believe how much story they were able to pack into these shorts. I love the music. I love the design, the 2D animation, just everything about it was amazing and brilliant. And I was just curious if there was a segment or a character that you related to the most. I think that Wirt is a very relatable character. I think his reactions and responses and just his weaknesses are very, are a lot of weaknesses that you and I and most people have. And so I really like him, and there were just so many things about it that I liked. So I'm just curious, and I look forward to hearing your response.
You know, I feel like I have a lot in common with the Beast. I'm just kidding. Greg is definitely the one I relate to the most, just because he's so random and off the wall. And people who know me know that, like, the first thing out of my mouth when I'm talking to you is usually something ridiculous. So.
Yeah, I agree with Rachel. I think Wirt is very relatable, because I think we all have those fears and those doubts. We can get defensive. We can kind of get stuck in our ways. So to see him and to see his growth, I could definitely make that assumption. I do not see myself as a Greg, unfortunately.
I don't see myself really as either. I have, like, moments of them, though.
I also see Beatrice, because I can be a little sassy pants.
Sassy little bluebird.
All right, who's next?
All right, our next one is from Aja.
Hi, Roadscopers. This is Usher here. Words cannot describe how ecstatic I am that you guys are tackling Over the Garden Wall in tonight's episode, as it is hands down my favorite cartoon of all time. For me, it's this surreal, haunting, beautiful, and incredibly touching fairy tale with unforgettable characters and a whole lot of parallels, mysteries, and symbolism thrown in for good measure. So with regards to that, my question for you guys is, what do you think the unknown really is? I'm sure you've come across the Dante's Inferno comparisons, and I know the popular consensus amongst fans seems to be that Wirt and Greg are caught sort of between life and death in a kind of purgatory, but I recently came across the following quote from Patrick McHale that gave me a lot more to ponder. So he said, "But maybe it's not only about life and death. Maybe it's also about reality versus fantasy and about dreams versus wakefulness. The unknown is literally the unknown. There are stories that were once told and are gone forever. Words that have been spoken and forgotten. Ideas that have been thought but lost. And there's plenty of stuff mankind has never thought of and will never think of. The unknown is all that stuff. If there is more to the universe than what humans can perceive, and of course there is, then maybe everything that can ever be conceived is floating around somewhere unseen and unknown in some abstract way. So maybe Wirt and Greg get a glimpse of it and make sense of these abstract concepts the best way they can understand. Goofy cartoon stories." End quote. I'd love to know your thoughts on this, so thank you for everything you do. Your podcast is easily the best thing on my iPod, and I'll talk to you soon. Okay, bye.
Yay!
Aw, Aja, you hit the nail on the head with the quote that you said about the unknown. I think that probably comes the closest to what I personally believe the unknown is.
Yeah, you can't get better than that quote. Awesome.
No, she's like, she wanted our opinions, and then she's like, but here's the most awesome thing you're going to hear.
But here's something that trumps all of your opinions.
All right, our next one and our finale is Sarah.
Smell for episode number 102, which is, according to Mason, Fritz the Cat. unless he was pulling my leg. Then, if so, can we bring back Mason shaming from episode 76?
Oh, no.
I'm not going to be watching that this week, obviously, because... but I thought of a new slogan for you guys, and I hope you like it. The Animation Addicts. Once you join, you can never go back. Anyway, it's just time to a quick voicemail. Love you guys. Hi, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. Have a good day.
Ain't I a stinker?
I did not preview these voicemails ahead of time, and yes, Mason was trolling in the comments of our last episode, Rotoscope 101, and he said that our next episode was going to be Fritz the Cat, which it was not if you've listened to the whole thing. Like, hopefully you did not think this was some sort of cloaked discussion of Fritz the Cat, because it was not. However, this does bring up a great point. We now, at the bottom of the website, I was pretty good about updating this, and it's summer, right? We're busy during summer, or lazy. And so there is a section on the bottom footer of the website that has our recording schedule. Since we are doing live shows now, we definitely want you guys to join, and we want you guys to be prepared and send in questions. So right there, it shows what day we are going to be recording. So from here on out, we're going to be recording Mondays, or every other Monday, at 5:30 Pacific, 7:30 Central Time. And so I have the list of the next five or so episodes that will be movies that we'll be recording. And basically, we're going to record on that Monday. And then if you are unable to join, then that episode will be released on a Friday, that following Friday, except for this episode, because Mason was going to be out of town. So we had to bump the recording up 1 week early. And if that's the case, we'll put a little down there, you know, letting you know things have changed. But from here on out, just basically, you know, if you're looking forward to our Friday release, it's the Monday before that when we go live and record. And of course, you can, if you subscribe to us on YouTube and you don't want to wait for us to release it on Friday, you can just watch the video version on our YouTube channel, which basically, once we hit end stream, it's live for you guys to watch. So it doesn't have the music, it's not going to be as tightly edited as the audio version. But that's the update on the new Animation Addicts process from here on out.
Yeah, and you know, so much of the show now, it depends on your participation, whether you're a fan or a Patreon subscriber. Like, we really want to engage with y'all, and we love communicating and fanboying, fangirling out with y'all on the website and, you know, on the live chat and stuff. And so we really appreciate all the support we've gotten from the Roto Nation and our fans and listeners. I consider them more friends than fans.
Yeah, Roto Friends, the Roto Gang. We're still
Roto Friends.
Still trying to think of a name for our collective community, whether you're a patron or not, because everyone is a Roto Friend. I'll include in the show notes another link to that poll, or you can go to rotoscopers.com/101. The poll will be there. Just a heads up, our next episode, we are going to record. It is going to be Fantastic Mr. Fox. So get ready for that. That is a really awesome film. We're really excited. That is
one of my favorite stop motion films ever.
Another patron's choice. This is AJ. And so we're excited to do his request. And then after that, Lilo and Stitch. And then after that, Hotel Transylvania 2. So that's basically the next month's worth of episodes. 2 months, basically. So keep watching, guys.
Led through the mist by the milk light of moon, all that was lost is revealed. Our long bygone burdens, mere echoes of the spring. But where have we come, and where shall we end? If dreams can't come true, then why not pretend?
Well, it has officially, the sun has officially gone down outside and turned into nighttime, so I lost my daylight, my natural light, so I time to hitch up the wagon and happy trails.
Yes, of course, for all show notes, you can find this at rotoscopers.com/102. That's where you can find the discussion and the Mason trolling. You know, we will not be doing Fritz the Cat, but let's see what Mason says in the show notes. That's what will include all the links to the YouTube videos that Mason was referring to, all the interviews, basically anything that's an external link that we were using as a source other than Wikipedia, because you can find that yourselves. We use Wikipedia for just the basic, you know, when it came out and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yes, find all that there. Also, give us a hashtag on Twitter, #AnimAddicts and #AnimAddicts0102. For this specific episode, and definitely, okay, we gave you the list of episodes that we're doing for the next few episodes, or we gave you the list of movies that we're doing for the next few episodes. So send us voicemails. We want to hear your reviews of those films. rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can give us a call on your phone at 406-646-6575. So yes, thank you so much. Subscribe on iTunes. You know, the same old jazz that we say every episode. You can find me on Twitter at Morgan Stradling. You can find Mason on Twitter at Mason MSTX. And of course,
SMTX.
Oh, yeah. I've done this how many times and I still can't get it right?
Somewhere out there, there's an Mason MSTX on Twitter who's like, why do people keep talking about animation to me? And I'm a waste disposal engineer.
Chelsea, you can find at Chelsea Robson. So thank you guys so much. I have absolutely loved this new format of show that we're doing with, you know, people. We had upwards as much as 20 plus people watching live. And I know it doesn't seem like very much, but considering before it was just the three of us, just hearing these people in the comments, hearing our friends in the comments, and being able to interact with them, and it really enlivens the discussion. So thank you so much. Thanks to the patrons. We love you guys. And until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers. There's always work for everyone when little boys get married.